stuff. What is happiness? Happiness is the nature of a pure soul, is happiness means no miseries. Happiness means where the soul is sentient, soul is conscious, and therefore the soul can experience different things, can experience different types of feelings. I guess you could say that happiness is an emotion or a feeling. So we could say that happiness is a feeling that the soul can experience and in the pure state, the soul gets happiness. There's two types of happiness. There's material happiness and spiritual happiness. So, material happiness is derived from the senses and the mind, or at least material instruments, indriya. Indriya means the senses, the instruments, where one of the senses comes in contact with the objects, the eyes come in contact with something visual, the ears come in contact with sound, the tongue comes in contact with something that has some taste, and then once that contact has been made, some kind of an electrical impulse or data is generated, and then it's sent to the mind, and the mind decides whether that was a favorable, whether that's a favorable experience, in which case, if it's favorable, then it's classified as happiness, or if it's determined to be an unfavorable experience, then it's called unhappiness. This is the method of getting this experience is through the body, through the bodily senses. You can see already that if the soul is the actual person, and the soul is a spiritual entity, then for the soul to derive pleasure through material senses and mind from material contact with sense objects, you can see how there could be some something that restricts, some restrictions there, or we could say static or some covering. We're trying to get pleasure. We're a spirit soul. We're trying to get pleasure through material mind, material senses, contacting material sense objects. And then that we're trying to get some pleasure out of that. We can see there's some difficulty there. Even just analyzing it, that it looks like a long way to go. The soul has to go through the mind, through the intelligence, through the senses, through the sense objects. It has to go out and come back. And then we have to convert them, you could say. Then whatever pleasure came, mental pleasure, because that's what it is. The hands themselves, the skin itself, doesn't know what a good feeling is. It doesn't get pleasure until it goes to the mind, and the mind says, "Hey, wait a minute, this is pleasing or not pleasing." Just like when your hand is given some, what do they call it? They make it numb. What's it called?
Morticated.
Yeah, if they want to do some operation on your hand, they make it so that you don't feel it. What's that called?
Anesthesia.
Okay.
Sort of.
Anesthetic. Local anesthetic. Yeah. So they give your hand anesthetic. So, that would mean that the hand is still there, the skin is still there, the nerve endings are still there, the blood is there, everything's there, but there's something that you're not, right, you're not identifying in the mind that's happening. They've made some arrangement that the mind doesn't feel. Because the hand doesn't know what, it doesn't have the apparatus to feel what is hot or cold. Therefore, if your hand is numb with anesthetic, it's dangerous. You have to watch what's happening to your hand. Because you can't rely just on the mind telling you or the sense. You have to watch it. One mechanic I have in America, he was saying his hand now, he had an operation, so his hand is numb. So he has to be very careful to watch his hand, because otherwise it can be getting cut and he doesn't even realize it. So the mind is essential for determining what is enjoyment and what is not enjoyment. And that's why when a person is mentally disturbed, then you have to watch out for that person, because he will not know, he will not be able to determine what is at least considered enjoyment by the rest of society. He may do something You may jump off a building without even considering what's going to happen. If I jump off this building, what's going to... Or he may be doing so many things that because his mind is not working properly, he can't determine how the senses can enjoy, at least according to material calculations, what is the best way to maximize material enjoyment. So, if there could be a way that the soul could bypass having to go through the mind and senses and the sense objects, if it could connect directly, and besides that, remember what's happening. He's going through the mind, through the sense objects, and he's trying to get some kind of sensation from that. Then it has to be converted into something that the spirit soul, the spiritual being, can digest, so to speak, or ingest as a spiritual sensation. It has to be converted to a different platform, to a different program. It has to be... Now, that's not going to be easy, because when you try to take something of a lower level, and then you try to transfer it or convert it onto something higher level, more sophisticated, it doesn't work. You know that if you have a program that's 6.5, then 6.5 program can deal with 3.0 program, but 3.0 program can't even relate to 6.5 program. Doesn't have any way of connecting. Because 3.0 is crude. 3.0 is less advanced. Therefore, you can't convert up. You can only convert down. So just imagine the difficulty. Now we're taking this gross, less advanced method of acquiring some kind of sensation, some pleasurable sensation. And we're then trying to convert that up to a higher level, which is the spiritual level. What are you going to get? You're not going to get very much. You're going to get, at best, some crude, very disorganized messages. It won't be very smooth, it won't be very pure. Well, that's essentially what's happening. The poor soul is trying to live on the pleasure derived from these crude senses, trying to extract some pleasure that the mind determines as pleasure from contact with matter, dead matter. You can just see how much you're losing. We're probably losing 99.999%, just to give that's an underestimate, but just to give some idea. That's how much we're losing. Even if whatever there was there, I'm saying losing, I'm assuming that there's some pleasure to be had from matter. That's also an assumption that can't be verified either. How can we even be sure that there is any pleasure? Because who would get the pleasure? When we speak of pleasure, it means there has to be a pleasure experiencer. And dead matter can't experience pleasure. It can't experience anything. There's no such thing as experience for dead matter. As soon as you say experience, you're referring to a person that's sentient, that's conscious. If something's unconscious, then it can't experience. Because experience means it's having some realization, some conscious involvement. And dead matter doesn't have any experiences. Dead matter doesn't feel hot or cold. A dead matter doesn't feel love or hate. A stone doesn't love another stone or so the question is whether or not the soul, the sentient being, the person, can even derive any pleasure at all from matter. Is there anything there that is compatible with the living soul? Well, it might seem as though yes, because we see that the conscious sentient beings are quite actively humming around and buzzing around this matter, and they seem to be laughing a lot and making a lot of plans as if they're happy, as if they're getting some pleasure. So we might conclude then that the soul is able to get some pleasure from matter. Okay, and this is corroborated. One great acharya, Jayadev Goswami, he said that material pleasure is like getting a drop of water on the desert. If you're on a desert, it's 140 degrees. There's only sand. There's no trees. There's no water. And someone comes in a helicopter and drops one drop of water down for you and then flies off. You can say that that's water. But how much can you get out of that one drop? You think you'll be satisfied with it? That one drop will probably, it'll evaporate by the time, maybe if you get it right on your tongue, it wouldn't evaporate so much. So you'd have to hopefully catch it just right in your mouth. Because if you catch it on your hand, it'll evaporate on your hot skin. And you won't even get any in the mouth. Maybe if you get one drop in your mouth. But how long will that one drop keep you? If it's 140 degrees and it's so hot, you'll burn it up in a second. So, he says that material pleasure does exist, but it's like one drop of water on the desert. So in other words, the soul is able to extract something, because what we have here evidently is also Brahman. It's also Brahman. It's of the same, it's coming from the same source, it's Brahman, but it's like some fruit that, if there's a fruit and somebody just squeezed all the juice, every drop of juice out and said, here's the fruit now. I hope, see how much juice you can get. So the juice has all been squeezed out. Maybe you can squeeze one more drop out. That's it. So, So, in other words, we can accept that there is some pleasure to be derived from matter interacting with the senses and processed by the mind and then converted by the intelligence and the false ego up into some kind of a quantifiable element or substance which could be determined by the soul as pleasure. Okay, everyone? So far we're all right. But how much pleasure is coming through? One drop on a desert. It's pleasure. It may not even be the highest grade pleasure, maybe low grade pleasure. But still it's pleasure. You can call it enjoyment. Because it gives the soul something. Because after all, this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with souls. Souls are the ones who are apparently experiencing the pleasures, the enjoyment. But just see what percentage of enjoyment they're getting compared to their potential. Imagine if they could get, if this is 1/1,000th, and that's being quite liberal, I think, 1/1,000,000th, because how much will one drop of water on the desert do for you? How many drops would you need to get something of value? Who would like to estimate? How many drops would you say? To get something of value, to sustain you in some kind of ongoing, continuous mode of pleasure.
More than a zillion drops.
A zillion, well...
More than.
Let's give a more... A zillion is hard to define. At least more than 1,000,000. Right? Easily more than 1,000,000. I don't know how many drops make up a glass of water. Any idea? Several thousand? Some thousands of drops. So then you have to drink the water, then you have to take a bath, then you have to grow some food, and then each day you have to have more water, so you're going to need lots of water, the point is. You're going to need lots and lots of water. And that one drop is not even 1,000,000th, probably not even 1,000,000,000th or 1,000,000,000,000th of what you need. So, using that analogy, which is a good analogy by a great Vaishnavacharya, we can understand that there's some pleasure coming through, some enjoyment is coming from matter. But, wow, so small. Such a tiny, minute amount of enjoyment we're through such effort, and then all we get is this one little minute fraction of what the soul wants, what the soul desires. Now, if that soul were at we're at a wonderful place, reservoir of water, fresh lake, fresh river. Then he's happy. Because then he can clean, he can drink, he can bathe, he can do so many things. He can even go on a boat ride, he can swim, he can grow things. But that's a different situation. So, in other words, the soul now in the material world is like a person on the desert with one drop of water. So he has to go from the desert He has to find his way over to the place where there's a nice, clear river. Then he can... Well, this is giving an analogy. Of course, it's also material, so we can't really compare spiritual pleasure to just something like water. But I'm giving some analogy just to compare. Billions, trillions of times more enjoyment is available if the soul could bypass trying to extract enjoyment from matter. Now, most people, they don't know any other, they don't even know that there is another mode, or that there is another place to get pleasure from. They've never heard of it. Or maybe they've heard something, but they don't know very much about it. So they put all their energy into extracting, trying to get enjoyment through the senses, going through the mind, being processed, and converted up to the intelligence, converted to false ego, converted again to the soul, and then getting a little tiny bit of enjoyment. But there's another realm, there's another mode where everything is spiritual already. This is compatibility, like in computers. If you have an incompatible connection, oh, it's so difficult. So hard to get anything done. One program is not compatible with another program. One computer is not compatible. Then one cable is not compatible with this. And one platform is not compatible. Oh, just imagine if you have all these incompatible connections. You're going to have a very difficult time accomplishing anything, getting anything valuable. But if everything is fully compatible, even totally digital, fully compatible, no loss, no drag, the soul connects completely with a totally spiritual connector and opening up to a whole spiritual realm that is of the same nature as the soul, then you can understand that the amount of information, the amount of pleasure, the amount of the time that this connection could go on, it's all so much greater. Because soul then is connected into a perfect reservoir of pleasure. Because by nature, the spiritual elements are sat chit ananda. That's the constituency of spirit. Eternal, full of bliss, and full of knowledge. Well, when the soul is connected to such a interface, a spiritual interface, and can draw from the unlimited reservoir of enjoyment. And if it's unlimited, then you can imagine that there must be unlimited varieties also, because variety is the mother of enjoyment. There can't be enjoyment if everything's just one. If someone says, here's some food, and they say, this is your food forever. You only get one type of food. Well, even if it's nice food, you're going to be thinking, well, this is going to be a little boring after a while. Only one type of food. We like varieties. Just like, why did we come out here today? We could have stayed in the, somewhere else. We came out here because we like varieties. We like trees, we like birds, we like grass, we like fresh air. We like to get away from honking vehicles. We even like all the different, we like the grass, we like the, because it's varieties. So if we're talking about something that's going to be enjoyable unlimitedly, you can be sure that it's going to have unlimited varieties of things to enjoy. Here in the material world, it seems as though there's unlimited varieties also. And there are, in a sense. You can make up so many different situations. What if I was, you know, with these people? What if I was in this temperature and I had this food, I had this drink, and I was this old? You can come up with thousands and millions of different combinations of enjoyment. And that's what people do. They spend their whole life trying to see how many different kinds of enjoyment they can get. And of course they're trying to get as many as possible in a short period of time. That's the goal, that's the game. Who can get the most varieties of enjoyment in the before they die? The game's over when you die. And of course if you die early, that's also considered kind of unfortunate, because you missed out. If you die at 50, you're not considered as fortunate as someone who lived older, because then he had more chance to get enjoyments, different combinations. Of course, at a certain age, it starts becoming questionable whether or not you're going to get any enjoyments at all anymore, or whether it might be better just to, you know, end the game. So that you stop getting the opposite of enjoyment. But anyway, that's another thing. So, if in the material world there's so many types of enjoyments, and remember, there's millions of types of enjoyments, but all you get, even if you're really good at it, is that one drop. All you can squeeze out. Your whole life, 80, 90 years out of trying like anything, working day and night to try to get pleasure, all you get as a composite conclusion is this one little drop, and you're burning in the desert. So, you can imagine why people are disappointed at death, because they worked so hard and they didn't get very much pleasure. And now they're looking forward to death, which is not very pleasurable. It's not very much enjoyment. It's kind of the opposite of enjoyment. And they don't know what's going to happen afterwards. But the spiritual realm has all these varieties, whatever we see in the material world, and much, much more. Billions and trillions of times more varieties. And they're fully compatible with the soul. So that the soul can directly import them, directly experience them, and be fully satisfied by every one of them. There's no conversion necessary. Same platform. No faulty cables, no bad programs. It's all totally compatible with the soul. And the connection is yoga. Now, within yoga, there's also different connections. There's the karma yoga connection, jnana yoga connection, ashtanga yoga connection. And from these connections, you don't get full. You derive some pleasure, but not full. At least you're connecting with the spiritual reservoir. But unfortunately, these connectors are not very, they're not perfect. You'll get something more than you got in the material world, millions of times more than that. But because these connectors themselves, karma yoga, jnana yoga, karma kanda, jnana kanda, kevala vishara bandha. Of course, that's material. But now let's talk about even the yoga processes, because we know Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yajjnanam advayam prameti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjate. Through the jnana yoga system, one gets Brahman realization. That means he's getting some of the spiritual enjoyment, but not all. And through paramatma realization, he's getting more. His cable is better, his connection is better. But not all. He's getting sat-chit. He's got a sat-chit connection. And the jnana yogi, he's got a sat connection. But because the topic of this discussion is enjoyment, we want to know where's the sat-chit, where's the ananda connection? Oh, that's from bhakti. The others, they don't really get the full bhakti, the full ananda connection. They get some enjoyment, but not the full bhakti, not the full ananda. The full ananda is only available from the bhakti cable, cable ananda bhakti, cable ananda kanda. He has to have the bhakti connection, then he gets the sat chit and the ananda, the unlimited enjoyment. When he's connected with bhakti, then anything he does, he's going to get full ananda. And it's just going to keep, it's going to be flowing in. Unlimited flow. Because he's connected to the reservoir. And there's an unlimited amount there. And anything he does, because he's connected to the bhakti cable, wherever he goes, he's just he's flowing in with the ananda. So he gets ananda everything he does. No losses. He gets ananda when he talks, he gets ananda when he walks, he gets ananda when he eats. He gets total ananda. And he's linked. And it's eternal. He's getting sat also total. And he's getting chit, full knowledge. So, in that situation, those are the tools for enjoyment. He has to have bhakti. He has to have that bhakti connector. Well, then one may say, well, where do I buy this bhakti connector? Radio Shack, they have some, or some computer store. Where do I get this bhakti connector? Is it available in the store? Well, not so easy to find that bhakti connector. Brahmande brahmite kono bhagyavan jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata beach. Some people, they go all over from brahmanda to brahmanda looking for the right connection, but they don't get it. Brahmande brahmite kono bhagyavan jeev. But if one of these souls is very fortunate, Bhagyavan Jeev, then Guru Krishna Prasad, if he gets the mercy of Krishna, then Krishna sends him the Guru. Guru is, you could say, the technician that connects the bhakti connector. You need, it's a very technical. You can't figure it out yourself. If you think, I'll just get the bhakti connector and I'll connect it. No. That's sahaja. If you try to connect it yourself, the bhakti, I'll just connect with Krishna myself without the guru. No, then you won't know how. And also, besides that, even if you try to connect, there's a missing part. The guru is a missing part. You have to have that. That's one part of the connector. It's a spiritual connector. It's not material. It's not restricting in any way your connection with the source, but it's required. Therefore, Krishna says in so many places, Acharya mam vijani yam navamanyeta kadichit. The Acharya, the Guru, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. You need the Guru. That has to be there. The Guru is the technician or the connect. He's helping you connect with the bhakti. That interface is required between the living entity, the jiva, and the supreme soul, Krishna. There needs to be that in-between guru. Then, the fortunate soul, Bhagyavan Jeev, he gets a guru. And then that guru makes the arrangement for the bhakti connection. Bhakti Lata Bij. He plants the seed. There's different analogies. Lord Chaitanya used the analogy of the guru as the gardener. He plants the seed of bhakti in the heart of the living entity, the jiva. So we have to find that connecting guru, but as we said, not everyone finds. It's Krishna's mercy. Is Krishna being, is he playing favorites? Is he giving to one and not to another? No. It's to one who is very fortunate. Why is he fortunate? He may be fortunate because he's performed many pious deeds. He's performed many pious activities. And now he's worthy. He deserves to come in contact with the Guru. Or he may have performed some devotional service before. He may have performed some bhakti, some yoga. And he may have made some progress. And then he gets another opportunity. This is part of the plan, that bhakti brings more bhakti. If one performs some bhakti, that means his chance for more bhakti will be there. It's a continuation. So if we can connect with bhakti through the spiritual master, and in this way, sambandha. Sambandha means connection with Krishna. make that connection nice and strong, solid, then Abhideya. The next stage is transmission. One performs devotional service and is getting more and more nourishment on the spiritual platform. He's getting knowledge, he's getting happiness, he's becoming situated. And then Prayojana, the ultimate stage of bhakti, is when one is getting love and ecstasy. Ecstasy is more than just enjoyment. Enjoyment, of course, is nice. One gets satisfaction, so many things. But when one gets ecstasy, it's a heightened state of enjoyment. Generally, in the material world, ecstasy is very, very hard to get. How many ecstatic emotions or how many ecstatic feelings do people get in their lifetime? Not so many. And the ones they do get, they don't last very long. They're quite fleeting. Therefore, people are so mad to try to find some ecstasy. Because that's the most sought out thing, is ecstasy. Because ecstasy is not just like ordinary enjoyment. Ecstasy is heightened to a very superior level. And actually it satisfies all the senses and the mind, everything at the same time. You know, some types of enjoyment we have. There's a, you know, a certain enjoyment like contentment, or enjoyment like sitting on a soft cushion. Oh, these are, but we wouldn't call these ecstatic. This is not ecstatic. And ecstasy is where all the senses, the mind, the intelligence, everything is getting full enjoyment. Now, and we're not talking about material enjoyment, because again, we already know how much pleasure we get out of that. One drop at the end of my life. That's all I get. So we're not talking about material ecstasy. We're talking about spiritual ecstasy, which satisfies all the spiritual senses of the soul. And that ecstasy, if it's continuous and full of varieties and increasing, not only that, but it's anandam buddhi vardhanam. Vardhanam means increasing. So if it's increasing also, you can just imagine the comparison between that and the type of pleasures that people are getting here. Not only people, but us. We may even be in that situation where we're still trying to get pleasure from the matter. You may say, well, this all, it sounds great. It's, you know, it makes sense that it would be better to get spiritual pleasure, but I'm quite accustomed to material pleasure. I'm afraid to give up, to cash in my material pleasure for spiritual pleasure, because I don't know if I'll get that ecstasy. That was what Arjun was afraid of. What if I give up the material and then I don't get the spiritual, and I've lost my material and I don't get the spiritual either? Then what? But that's not going to happen if one is carefully following the directions of the spiritual master. He won't allow that to happen if we follow. So the question is, if we're prepared to follow the directions of the spiritual master, then that won't happen. Just like if you're walking up a mountain and you're following an expert guide, then he promises you won't fall off. But if you disobey him, if he says, come this way, and you say, no, I'm going to go the other way, then you may fall off. So that much, therefore, it is said that tadvigyanartam so gurume vabhigachet. If someone's actually interested in spiritual life, then he needs a guru. If he's going to follow. If he's not going to follow, then there's no need to have a guru. Don't waste your time. Because what's the use in having a guru that you don't follow? What's the use in having a guide who's taking you on the mountain if you don't follow? You're just wasting time. Therefore, the essential tool, you could say, is, yes, they're all these things are essential tools, but without the guru, we won't be able to even get the bhakti. What to speak of the pure bhakti, what to speak of connecting. So therefore, just like, what is it that brought Krishna consciousness to so many people's lives around the world? Well, it was the spiritual master, because Prabhupada came and distributed it. If Srila Prabhupada hadn't come, then it doesn't mean that Krishna is not there. Krishna was there. The book, the Vedas were there. Vedas were there. Krishna was there. Even Vrindavan was there. Even super souls in the heart. Everything's there. But nobody could perceive it. Nobody could get to it. Nobody could get Krishna. Therefore, you can just see how important the spiritual master is, because it was his coming to the West that accounts for our being somewhat involved with bhakti, being somewhat involved with Krishna. Otherwise, we didn't have solid connection with Krishna. Even people from India, of course, they knew about Krishna, but you can ask many of them, they'll also admit that it was Prabhupada that actually gave them the real connection with Krishna. Otherwise, it may have been cultural or familial or whatever. But the real connection through real bhakti has come through Srila Prabhupada. So that's the value of the pure devotee, the spiritual master, what can happen. And without that, we won't be able to connect with Krishna. So I think on that note, we can connect with Krishna through prasadam, Krishna prasadam. That's a very direct spiritual way to experience Krishna and experience spiritual pleasure, spiritual enjoyment. All right.